First, I'm going to give a real quick charitable judgment review. I don't know. Well, how many of you guys have listened to it or went to it? Like, oh, the majority. Great. Okay. I'm still going to do a super quick review just so that we can, so that it can kind of feed into what we're about to talk about. So a charitable judgment is a loving judgment, and it's the idea that out of the love for God, you strive to believe the best about others until you have facts to prove otherwise. You can reasonably interpret facts in two possible ways. If you can, God calls you to embrace the positive interpretation over the negative, or at least to postpone making judgment until you acquire conclusive facts. It also involves assuming a humble posture and perspective that basically says there may be something that I'm not seeing correctly, or perhaps I don't have the facts straight. So it's like going into a situation and realizing you might not know everything. So critical judgments then are the opposite, and they're where we assume the worst without having enough evidence to support our conclusions. And we often apply critical judgments in two main ways. I'm sure there's a lot of other ways than just two, but what for the purpose of this, one is when someone does something that impacts us and we jump to a lot of negative thinking about that person. Like, she didn't return my call, and we come up with a lot of negative judgment about that. Another is when someone else tells us something secondhand about something someone has done or said, and we kind of jump on the critical bandwagon and totally accept that story without really thinking through it. So it's like we hear one side of a story and determine, that sounds like something he would do. I always knew he was greedy, you know, or whatever. We come up with these judgments that are related to things we've heard. And if you, since most of you guys listen to my teaching, you know that God can train our thinking. I mean, we know that, right? We know that God can transform us. And we also know that concerning this type of thing, this negative judgmental thinking, unity is the biggest thing at stake. And that's why it's so important. And you can find that workshop on the website under counseling workshops. It's pretty easy to find. First, you have to go to ministry and then counseling workshop. Counseling comes up and then it's counseling workshops. Sorry. All right. So for today, I intended to think more about our thinking, especially suspicion. But while I was studying, something interesting happened. That the definition of suspicion is a positive feeling of actual apprehension or mistrust without sufficient evidence. And so I realized that actually suspicious thinking is just part of critical judgment and judgmental thinking. It doesn't actually stand alone. There might be nuances, but they're really in the same camp. So those terms, you'll hear me talk about them, but they might be interchangeable today. I might say negative judgment, I might say critical thinking, I might say suspicion. But they're all referring to the negative judgments we make without evidence. Also interesting to note that the opposite of suspicion is faith and trust, and that makes sense, right? We're saying charitable judgment is giving the benefit of the doubt, applying some trust. And so suspicion then is the opposite of that, not giving the benefit of the doubt. Okay, so the overview will be, I'm going to talk about how it's a fight to be a charitable judger. And I'm going to talk about our role in developing a charitable mindset. There will be a little bit of overlap there with the first one, but there's also some new things added. And then I'm going to spend the majority of the last part of the class doing practical exercises with you guys, where you guys can, you know, look at some scenarios and think about what maybe would be, what would be critical thinking, what would be charitable thinking. So the first thing is, it's really a fight to have charitable judgments. It's really difficult. We are fighting against our society, we're fighting against Satan, and we're fighting against our own human fallenness. So in our society, I don't know whether you have noticed this, but we live in a very judging and suspicious society right now. Anything you read is often going to be tainted with judgment or suspicion. The trust of politicians, police, medical workers, teachers, everyone, the trust of everyone has decreased. We live in an age of conspiracy theories, so those things are floating out there. And people feel a lot of freedom to judge publicly online. Man, all you have to do, I don't recommend it, but all you have to do is read the comments underneath, like an article or someone's social media post, and it is amazing how full of judgment they are. I use this example in another thing I did, but I was reading about the disease that Celine Dion got, which is called stiff person syndrome, that a friend of mine happens to have that's very rare. And people said things like, "You deserve to get that. I'm so glad you got that disease." Like, people wrote those things. And it's just really, it's just rampant in our society. Another thing is that Satan is against charitable judgments. And it's really strange, but I never mentioned Satan in my initial workshop. So suspicion's in the air we breathe in terms of our culture, but it's also in the air we breathe because Satan, Ephesians 2 says, "You were dead in your offenses and sins in which you previously walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, of the spirit that's now working in the sons of disobedience." So Satan is the spiritual ruler in the invisible realm, and he influences the atmosphere of the world system. So it's not just that human beings are participating, but also he has an influence as well. So suspicion and judgment ooze into the air, into our lives, into the life of the church. And there, Satan loves to sow disunity. So part of what's happening is he's trying his best to create this kind of atmosphere where we're going to be suspicious of each other. And we have to acknowledge that we're unified with him if we allow this kind of negative judgment and this kind of suspicion to rule our lives, that we're actually walking alongside him and aligning our thinking with him. The other thing is that critical judgments come naturally. And I talked a little bit about this in the last one, Jeremiah 17. We have a wicked heart, so no one can understand it. So we're bent toward negativity, toward treating people badly. But there's other weird stuff about the brain. One thing is that the brain's reward system is active during gossip, just like when we do something else that gives us feelings of pleasure. So interestingly, our brain actually responds and loves when we're getting some sort of tidbit of gossip. Proverbs 8:18 confirms this and says, "The words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to the inmost parts." We're built this way, and our brains actually encourage us to have these kind of juicy negative conversations. Also, our minds are subject to hijacking and making quick assumptions. So there's this thing called the amygdala hijack. It's where information comes to us and it triggers our emotions. And what happens is this part of the brain, the amygdala, can take control of our minds before we can actually process the data. So it's like this idea that we can have someone say something to us, it hurts us and we're kind of overwhelmed or flooded with anger or emotional response, it actually is part of the way our brain works. And so, unfortunately, when our emotions go way up like that, our reasoning goes down. Also, there's two other really weird things that I wasn't really aware of that about our interaction with others and how it can affect our thinking. So there's been a lot of research done with people who are witnesses for like a trial or something like that. And they've done a lot of different things where they've put people together, had them talk, or like shown two different videos, and then the videos are different, and then they get together and talk, and what's the outcome of what they think the testimony is. One thing is called social contagion, and it refers to the spread of a memory from one person to another. So actually sometimes, and actually a friend of mine just told me about a story of this from his youth. Actually, sometimes we can adopt a memory of something that happened that isn't actually ours. And the speaker can impose, a new memory onto the listener that the listener didn't experience. That's really a little bit unnerving in terms of our memory and our thinking. The other thing is called memory conformity, which refers to instances in which two people talk about a past event, and what one person says can influence what the other person then comes to report. So it's not exactly adopting the memory, but it's like now the person has this other idea about what happened. So you see that this stuff with the brain, the fact that we're naturally built this way, the fact that our brain can be a little bit not 100% reliable, could be have some serious implications when we're talking about trying to have the right judgment about people and about events. So one thing is we're drawn to enticing wrong thinking. We're drawn to it. We like the enticing wrong thinking. And repetition and interaction about stories can impact the truthfulness. So when things are repeated, there can be mistakes made where one person has now believes this thing happened that actually didn't happen. So suspicion, I think of it like an infectious disease, and they even use that social contagion word. One accusation triggers another, suspicion foments more suspicion. And I think this verse, Proverbs 16, says a perverse person stirs up conflict and a gossip separates close friends. And that's what happens when we allow ourselves to be run by the critical judgment thinking. It produces discord. And this is Proverbs 6, which is taken from the part that says, these are things that the Lord detests. And it says, he detests a false witness who pours out lies and a person who stirs up conflict in the community. And these, it just is, as we're thinking about wanting to be peacemakers, as we're thinking about wanting to be people who are able to give other people charitable judgment, it's just important to understand that this runs pretty deep in us, this tendency. Now, I can't talk about judgment without at least acknowledging that judgment as discernment is important. I mean, we know that, right? I'm not saying we should never judge. We do. We have to use discernment. Have you ever seen this movie, Catch Me If You Can? It's about Leonardo DiCaprio plays this guy who successfully frauded tons of people and money by becoming things like a lawyer without going to law school, like a pilot. He had many, many jobs. So discernment's important, right? Like, luckily Tom Hanks figures it out and goes after the dude and then uses his techniques for good. But, you know, it's like, that we should have discernment. If there's a faker in our midst, if there's something awry, we need to address it. But we know that sometimes, and this is Severus Snape, he's in the Harry Potter books, I don't know if you know them, but sometimes someone has there can be things looking bad about them, but actually with more evidence, we can find out that they're good. Sorry, spoiler if you never read it. So it's like, it's important to use discernment, of course, but we need to keep in mind that we always should be aware that we need evidence to be able to support what we believe. Okay, so what enables us to switch from a suspicious mindset to a charitable mindset? And this is important because God's all about our mindset. The Bible is clear that a lot of the war of Christianity takes place in our minds. So our mindset's bent, more, some of us more than others, to the negative judgment. But how do we train ourselves, or how do we move from a suspicious way of thinking to a charitable mindset? And I'm going to talk about several things. First, I want to acknowledge it can't be done without the Holy Spirit's power. But we get to play a role in that. That's the cool thing about how God works. It's like he's the one who's going to change us, but we have a part to play, and there's things we can actually do. So the first is commitment to hard work, becoming aware and slowing down and becoming an observer, having the courage to ask clarifying questions, allowing God to teach us to be humble, and cultivating a spirit of love and forgiveness. So first, the commitment to hard work. It's anything related to our thinking is actually really hard. It is actually important for us to understand that. We can't just say like, oh, that'll be easy. I'm going to switch to the positive view. That's just not how it works. So the idea of taking our thoughts captive is actually very hard work to pay attention to your thoughts and then compare them to the word. Philippians 4 says, whatever is honorable, true, noble, focus on these things. Like there's a lot in the Bible about our mindset, and it is something God wants us to learn to do, but it is not easy. If we want to be peacemakers, we have to change the way we think about conflict. So if you're a peace faker, that is someone who by nature wants to avoid conflict or deny it. Many of us are. We need to, when we're in these situations and someone said something to us or we've heard something, we need to be willing to do the work to engage instead of denying and avoiding. Hard work, right? Many of us would like to just leave that alone. Someone hurt us and we're actually hurt. And we just are like, I'm not going to bother. I can't tell you. I mean, that's rampant in our fellowship. 10 years, I mean, people have told me things that they're still upset about 10 years ago that they never talked to anyone. And we need to be able to ask questions. And so even if you're a peace, even if you avoid conflict and you find out and you're like, oh, that's great. I can give them the benefit of the doubt. There still might be good questions to ask, to wade in there. I mean, it's not just like a one and done, like, okay, that's over and I'm never going to deal with that again. So we have to be able to, we'd be willing to ask questions. Again, hard work. If you're a peace breaker, that's someone who likes to attack or win, then your hard work is to slow down and to check yourself, to keep yourself from jumping to conclusions and assumptions, and to figure out how to think differently about the situation. So peacemaking is a commitment to fight for the truth, and fighting for the truth is hard. It just is. And as people, you know, I don't know, I'm getting old now, so it's like, sometimes I'm just like, oh, do I really want to wade in there? It's just like, I have to go have this conversation. I have to go ask this question. But it really is worth it. It's worth it to learn it, and it's worth it to do it. The second thing is to be self-aware, to slow down and observe yourself. Also challenging. So Ken Sandy describes Self-awareness is the ability to accurately discern emotions and thoughts. And then self-engagement, where you're actually kind of relating with yourself, is the ability to manage your thoughts, emotions, words, and actions by so that they advance God's purposes. So this is what we want, right? We want to be people who don't fly off the handle about something that happened without having all the evidence. We want to be people who are able to explore, what am I actually thinking? What am I actually feeling? How should I engage? There's a book called Change Your Questions, Change Your Life. And in this book, they talk about how there's like basically two paths people can take, and that a lot of times our default path is the judger mindset, and the path that we want to be on is the learner mindset. And so this author says, this is the key to success, building the muscles of the observer self. Self-coaching is impossible without a strong observer. Choice begins with observing our own thinking and our own mindsets. It's about developing ways to make intentional, conscious choices rather than being controlled by events around us or by our emotions. And I think that's what we want. We want to make deliberate decisions about situations that we're in. We don't want to be controlled by our events, by other people, by our emotions. So we need to learn the way, in that book, the way they talk about it is we really need to learn this questioning of ourselves and of our situation to be able to move from being a judger to a learner. And they say, even when you're a judger, you have questions. It's just a different kind of question than if you're a learner. So, you know, we need to ask ourselves things like, why am I responding the way I am? Why am I taking this personally? Is this related to anything I've experienced in the past? What else do I need to know? How can I help the person who's presenting this story to think alternatively? And this is this idea that we need to step back and observe ourselves. When I taught high school, I put students in volunteer internships. That was my job. I got volunteer internships for them. I can't talk. And one of the journal entries that we did was this one called Third Eye, where they were supposed to look at themselves, step back, and pretend they're watching a movie of themselves in the internship so that they could get some insight into how they behave. Because, you know, when you're kind of observing yourself, it's different than when you're in the moment. And so that's what I think we need to do. We need to be aware. We need to observe. Like, what am I doing? What are the actions I'm taking? Why did that person respond so badly to me? Maybe because I was like this or this, ready to attack. So that leads right into the idea that I think we need courage to ask clarifying questions. And I say courage because it's kind of scary to ask questions. So we have to be committed to wade in with questions. It's helpful because it reveals more details and truth. It sets up robust communication. Instead of being a denier or just not bringing it up, it allows for the communication that we need to take place. And it's important for us to always question what we hear and think. It just is a good strategy to be open to the fact that we might not know everything and to question, what do we really believe this? What did we really hear? It's scary because it may involve questioning a person's story. And that can be really difficult. It can involve not agreeing with another person. And that can be difficult as well. But we need to do it because asking questions opens up our thinking and other people's thinking. So it puts a different slant on what's happening. So we should, change your questions, change your life, says we should resolve to be a learner. And they say the point is that question thinking makes us aware of our mindset and puts us more in charge of making the changes we want. In every moment of our lives, we're faced with choosing between the learner mindset path and the judger mindset path. Choice is ours, always ours, although it takes practice and sometimes courage to make the best use of it, right? It is there for us to make these decisions. We can ask these questions, but we have to work at it and we have to practice. So I was thinking through sort of like the judger, like I said, the critical mindset also has thoughts, not always questions, but you know, how can I prove I'm right? She only cares about herself. He'll never change. She wants to harm me. What's wrong with them? They swept this under the rug. Why doesn't anyone care about the things I care about? This list could go on. There are many things we think when we're in that mode. But I think it's a great contrast to the learner mindset that can open ourselves up to the charitable mindset. So why am I having this response? What are the actual facts? What don't I know? What can I learn? What are alternative interpretations? What am I assuming? How can I create unity? And do I need to have a conversation with the person who impacted me? And again, just barely scratching the surface, but just giving some ideas. I think for you guys here, one of my burdens is that we learn how to be charitable judgers, but that we also help our friends. And I think that's hard, to then wade in and try to help our friends think differently. And here are some ideas of what could be clarifying questions for others. Some of these were repeated in the first workshop, but of course I always say alternative interpretations, it's always on my list because it's such a powerful tool. Was the person you were talking to telling you first or secondhand information, getting them to think? Could you go back to the person and ask more questions? Are you able to forgive, depending on the situation and where the conversation is going? On a scale of 1 to 10, how egregious, how bad was this thing that happened? Because it helps put things in perspective. If you're really irate about something, but then you say it's a 3, it kind of makes you realize maybe your emotions are going a little strong. Could you talk to someone who knows more about the situation? This has come up a lot in the fellowship, and maybe you know or don't know, but sometimes there's someone who could help you. So like, you hear something, your friend comes to you and says, I heard this thing, and then you're like trying to help them. One thing is you could try to find out, is there someone who knows more information about that who could potentially help them? Because sometimes there are people who know more about the thing that the person has encountered. So that's just a good thing to keep in mind. All right, the fourth thing is humility. And of course, in Matthew 7, when he talks about the log and the speck, Jesus urges us to examine our hearts before judging other people, emphasizing humility and self-reflection over suspicion. I love 1 Peter 5:5. All of you clothe yourselves with humility toward one another because God is opposed to the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Andrew Murray picks up on this idea of clothing yourself with humility, and he says, in their spiritual history, men may have had times of great humbling and brokenness, but what a different thing this is from being clothed with humility, from having a humble spirit, from having that lowliness of mind in which each counts himself the servant of others, and so shows forth the very spirit which was also in Christ Jesus. It reveals itself not only in words or thoughts, but in tone, a way of speaking to others. I feel like this is a beautiful idea. If we actually could be clothed with humility, what does that mean? It means our first impression to people is humility, that we're actually covered with it. A lot of times I think I'm covered in defensiveness. I'm covered in being right. That's what I'm clothed with. But what if we could be clothed with humility? What a difference that makes in charitable judgment and in our communication with people. Proverbs 11 says, when pride comes, then comes dishonor, but with the humble there is wisdom. This is wisdom, charitable judgment, being able to look to God and say, I need your help on being humble and communicating. And if we just even left here and said, I'm afraid to pray this prayer, God, but I actually want to learn what it looks like to be clothed with humility, we would go a long way to becoming stronger in these areas. And then last, we need to cultivate a spirit of love and forgiveness. And in my last workshop, I said a few of these verses from 1 Corinthians 13. I said, this is a passage that we need to meditate on. And I mean, I'm telling you what, this passage is so overused that it's almost hard to read it without singing song, like sing-songy. Love is patient, love is kind. And it's actually one of the most powerful. This is so powerful. If you think about this with regard to our mindset and with the idea of having this view and this way of interacting with people and having charitable judgment, it's super powerful. Love is patient. Love is kind. It's not jealous. Love does not brag. It's not arrogant. It does not act disgracefully. It does not seek its own benefit. It's not provoked. Does not keep an account of wrong suffered. It does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. It keeps every confidence. It believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. I mean, these words are powerful. Kindness, not being arrogant, leaning into that humility factor. It doesn't act disgracefully. The opposite of when we are like chewing on a juicy morsel about someone that we don't even know if it's the truth. That's disgraceful. Doesn't keep account of wrong suffered. Man, how much of our judgmental thinking is about wrong suffered? Rejoices with the truth. So this is a direct lining up with God. God's the one who has truth. God's the one who rejoices with truth. This is a slap in the face of the evil one who wants us to believe lies and then believes all things. Not in a naive way, but in a way to give the benefit of the doubt and hopes all things. I also like this love verse, Romans 12. It says, love must be free of hypocrisy, detest what is evil, cling to what is good, be devoted to one another in brotherly love, give preference to one another in honor, not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. I feel like this kind of pulls together some of the things I've said today. Because it's like, work hard, don't lag behind in diligence. Cling to what is good. Don't go after the thing that you don't know if it's actually true or not. Give preference to one another in honor. What a sweet picture if we could actually think of people when we're in that judging mindset, if we could begin to think, okay, how do I give preference to this person in honor instead of holding on to these negative thoughts? So, and this is, of course, the last thing is actually related to forgiveness. Take seriously his call to bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. Again, I cannot emphasize this enough. I feel like, and not because I'm like master forgiver. I mean, I'm not saying it like I've really learned how to let go of everything there is. But I am saying that I've seen the damage of bitterness in my own life, and I've seen the damage in other people's lives. And it is really important that we figure out how to forgive. And so part of what helps our mindset as we're talking about engaging in having a different mindset is reflecting on how much you've been forgiven. That always puts things into perspective. Ask God to show you where you are judging, punishing, and demanding. We need his insight on this. And then, super difficult, choose not to dwell on the incident and don't bring it up to others. And finally, after forgiving, do not allow the incident to interrupt your friendship. This is like, you know, we're united in the spirit. God is all powerful. But man, human beings really have a way of messing these things up. And we do have a way of holding things against each other. And we have a way of breaking relationships. And I'm not saying sometimes that happens. And that's the way it is. And, you know, when we get to heaven, it'll be all right. But also I'm making a plea that if we want to be charitable judgers, part of that is forgiving and becoming people who forgive. So to allow God to change our mindset is these things: commit to hard work, become self-aware, ask questions, ask God to teach humility, cultivate love and forgiveness. If we allow God to transform us in this way, our mindset can become more like His and less into our default of suspicion and judgment.